20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's up, friends? Happy Tuesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. We are closing in on the 4th of July. We are closing in on Packers training camp. We are less than 3 weeks away from that very first practice. I can feel it. I can taste it. I cannot wait already. But before we get there, we've got still a ton of things to discuss. And today, what we're going to be going over are possible training camp trade candidates. Now, let me be fully transparent with you right off the bat. We're not doing some clickbait stuff here, all right? If you're thinking that this is going to be where we talk about Christian Watson for Jonathan Taylor or those type of trades or some big Brandon Ayuk trade, this is not the place, nor the time, nor the team to be discussing those sort of things. Those are unrealistic waste of time for all of us. The odds that anything like that actually happens are slim to none. So we can do a fantasy episode of talking about it. And quite frankly, it probably does a little bit better numbers, right? If my title for today's episode was, you know, what could Green Bay get for Christian Watson in a trade? It's probably going to do some numbers, even if it's, you know, stupid numbers. And even if everyone's like clickbait or whatever, I would rather talk about realistic stuff every single freaking time. And when we talk about the Packers potentially trading players around training camp, usually at the end of training camp, they have made some trades in the past that have helped them gather additional draft capital or maybe do a player for player swap. And this has been something that has been prevalent in the Brian Gutekunst era. And this is something that he has been very, very good at. Listen, if you are going to release a player and instead you can actually get a future sixth or seventh round pick for those type of players, my goodness, can that help you? Listen, there's a reason why Brian Gutekunst has had some success drafting in the seventh rounds. It's because in a lot of these drafts, he's had three or four draft picks in the seventh round. You know, it makes it easier to hit on guys like Carrington Valentine and Rashid Walker when you're making multiple selections on that, you know, at seventh round that late in the draft. So if you can trade away some guys that are fringe roster players and get that future draft capital, it can seriously pay dividends down the road. And we have seen this. Brian Gutekunst was able to get a seventh round pick for Cole Van Lannen. Like, that was a big trade, relatively, at the time, because it ultimately gets you a future draft pick for a guy they were probably going to release to try to get back on the practice squad. And clearly, if a team was willing to give up draft capital for him, they were going to claim him on waivers, and they were going to lose him anyway. Josh Jackson was traded for Isaac Yiadom. They didn't get any future draft capital, but they got a player that ended up being a core special teamer for them in that season. Did not play very well at corner. Interestingly enough, Isaac Yiadom actually had a really good season last year. That trade, if they would have held on to Yiadom, may have actually been something where he could have been usable as a corner. He certainly was in New Orleans a season ago, but I digress. They still did a player for player swap. Josh Jackson ends up out of the league. Isaac Yiadom ends up being a player, like I said, that played well for the Saints a season ago, and played special teams for them almost that entire season. So you're looking for minute, you know, even if you can take a player and grab a small incremental upgrade, these are the things that you're trying to do. And again, Yiadom ended up not really turning out, but he turned out better than Josh Jackson did. We'll just put it that way. He was able to get a seventh round pick for Kadar Hallman. He's able to get a sixth round pick for Reggie Gilbert, a seventh round pick swap for Justin McCray, a sixth round pick for Trevor Davis, and a sixth round pick for Brett Hundley. That is, what, 3 sevenths and 3 sixth round picks in addition to their what they already had for guys that they were almost assuredly going to be releasing off of the roster anyway. And those are the type of deals that you make where, you know, listen, you it's like the YouTube, you know, people who start with a, you know, string and they trade the string for something a little bit bigger. And then they trade that for something bigger. And then they go to a pawn shop and trade it for two other things. All of a sudden they turned a string into like a car. You know, we've all seen these ridiculous videos, but that's what Brian Gutekunst is trying to do. Like right now, that player that you're about to release may look like he's a player on the scrap heap and you can just release him and somebody else may or may not pick him up. But if you can turn that into a seventh round pick and then that seventh round pick into Rashid Walker, and he ends up becoming a starting left tackle, and all of a sudden you've got a big time player that ended up out of nowhere for a player that you were just going to release anyway, those things can have a huge impact on your team. So what I want to look at today is what players are on this roster right now that could have some potential trade value similar to a Kadar Hallman or a Cole Van Lannen, and what could they potentially get in return, and what situations would have to arise, for the Packers to actually trade some of these players. And I'll say it one more time. If you're looking for a Christian Watson or some big name player on this list, I'm sorry, that is not going to happen. But we do have 10 players that I think this ultimately could happen to, where Brian Gutekunst tries to get something for nothing and grab a late round pick in return, or maybe a player for player swap that could help this team, even if it's ever so incrementally. Let's start at quarterback. Sean Clifford. Sean Clifford is the most obvious potential scenario here. All right, Jordan Love is clearly going to be your one. They drafted Sean Clifford in the fifth round a season ago. And then this year, they go out and draft a rookie in the seventh round. And he kind of looked pretty darn good in OTAs and minicamps, and that is Michael Pratt. Now, as Matt LaFleur mentioned, his head is swimming, and it's like he's drinking through a fire hose. Michael Pratt's got a long way to go. And if he wants to win that number two job, he's going to have to come back to training camp ready to go, fully digesting that playbook and knowing exactly what to do. That is a lot to ask for a rookie quarterback. But if you end up in a situation where Michael Pratt does take a big step already, and he does have a great feel for the playbook, and he goes out and performs well in training camp and in preseason, so much so that he becomes the number two quarterback, you could absolutely see a world in which maybe the Packers don't want to keep three quarterbacks on the active roster. And if Michael Pratt does in fact win that number two and Sean Clifford has a decent to solid preseason, you could end up in a situation where if you release Sean Clifford, you feel like you may not get him back on the practice squad. Or you may just may not want a scenario in which you keep three quarterbacks when you may need to keep extra wide receivers or running backs or tight ends, offensive linemen. We could go on and on. There are multiple position groups on this team where you might want to keep an extra player, and that may not be conducive to keeping three quarterbacks on the team. So if Michael Pratt wins that spot and you don't want to keep three QBs, you don't think Sean Clifford's going to be able to get back on the practice squad, you call around. And I do believe, and some people might disagree with me on this, I think if he has a solid to good preseason, I do believe he would have trade value. Now, you're probably trading, you're losing ROI on it, right? I don't think you're getting a fifth round pick back for Sean Clifford, which is what you spent on him. But I bet you could get at worst a conditional seventh round pick, or maybe just a clear sixth or seventh round pick for him, especially if he had a good preseason. Listen, quarterbacks are hard to find. And if anyone even believes that he could be a developmental guy or a solid backup QB, some team will be willing to throw a sixth or seventh round pick at him, just like a team was willing to spend a sixth round pick to trade for Brett Hundley. So I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility at all. And while I believe that Sean Clifford is probably the more likely of the two to win the backup quarterback spot, which would mean they're not trading him, and while I believe that even if Michael Pratt does win the number two, there's a really good chance that they just do keep three quarterbacks, I do think there is the possibility that Sean Clifford could be used as trade bait for one of those late seventh round picks, sixth round picks. Again, if you can get something back like that, you absolutely take it. You let Michael Pratt be the two, and then you go hunting for a new practice squad quarterback that you can bring in and start developing, and he can be the backup to the backup and in break in case of emergency sort of situation. And I think you could easily find guys like that that are worth developing you don't have to subject to waivers because you can immediately put them on the practice squad. So I think that is within the realm of possibility. All right, let's talk about another one. This one's at running back. That's AJ Dillon. Now, I know I've seen some of the comments. Andy, you are just a AJ Dillon hater. I promise you, I am not. Who doesn't like the mayor of Door County? He is the freaking mayor of Door County. He's been great in the community. He has been a guy that has definitely carried the G. He's AJ Dillon. He's, like I said, the mayor. Like, everyone loves AJ, all right? But how many times I have to go over this to some extent, you have to view these things from a GM's point of view. It's not a fan's point of view. It's not our favorite players. It's not anything like that. It's not the guy that is always our favorite out in the community or somebody that is the mayor of Door County. This is a GM's point of view on how you view a player like AJ Dillon. I remember a story from Russell Westbrook where he said he never wanted to take a league minimum. You know, when he was getting released from teams or bought out from teams, he refused to take a league minimum. Because once you're a league minimum guy, you stay a league minimum guy more often than not. And that just is your new reality. He never wanted to do that. And so far, I believe, and maybe NBA Twitter or NBA viewers can correct me if I'm wrong here, I don't believe he has taken a vet minimum as of yet in the NBA. So there is this idea that sometimes when you start getting to that point, there is a different view of you. And AJ Dillon, although he didn't exactly take the vet minimum, he will basically get the vet minimum from a salary cap standpoint. Green Bay ends up paying a little bit more based on that special contract for, you know, being a player who's played 4 years with a team and you can basically double his salary while only having to pay half of it against the salary cap. But here's the bigger thing. The guaranteed money is what you want to look at here. And under $200,000 in guaranteed money for AJ Dillon, that is, you know, pennies on the open market when you are a free agent, unrestricted free agent running back. And I get running back is not this uber high paid position. Totally understand it. This is a running back in his prime with his first opportunity to see free agency, and he got nothing. Now, I do believe that this is a player that wanted to stay in Green Bay and probably took a little bit less to stay in Green Bay. I totally believe that. I really do. But I don't think it was significantly less. I don't think that he was getting some two-year, $10 million offer from some team. He's like, no, I want to stay with Green Bay for $2 million. I just don't see it that way. And I've talked about this time and time again. How you have to view this from a GM's point of view is you're probably keeping three running backs at most, right? We have seen Green Bay go with two and then add guys to the practice squad, but you're probably keeping three. Unlikely that you keep four. And two of those spots are 100% taken in Marshawn Lloyd and in Josh Jacobs. Those two are not going anywhere. They will, unless they're hurt and on IR, they will be on the 53-man roster. So that leaves one running back spot. And this is where you start doing the GM math. And you start looking at players like Emmanuel Wilson or Jarvion Howard, or if any of these guys make it even close to AJ Dillon, they are cheaper, they are younger, and they are under team control for longer. And that is why I say that there is at least a world, a possibility in which if, and I've said this over and over, it's up to Emmanuel Wilson or Jarvion Howard to make it close, which means they had a really good training camp in preseason and probably AJ Dillon did not. But if there's anywhere near close, then you keep the younger player, the cheaper player, the player that has more years of team control every single time. That is going to pay off for you far more often than not. Now, as I've said before as well, I expect AJ Dillon to be on the 53-man roster. I expect him to even have a shot at the number two, depending on what Marshawn Lloyd can do from a pass pro standpoint and if he can hang on to the football. But if you get to that point where Emmanuel Wilson does have a great camp and you do think that Emmanuel Wilson is a worthy number three running back and you have your other two spots already spoken for, and with, you know, Josh Jacobs, Marshawn Lloyd, and Emmanuel Wilson, and that's the three you want to go forward with, well, then what do? You call around the league. And I guarantee you that, you know, there, I do believe, like I said, there was interest in AJ Dillon for probably a little bit more than what Green Bay paid him. So you call around, you see if some team's willing to trade a sixth or seventh round pick or a conditional pick for AJ Dillon, you pick up that draft pick. And here's the other thing too, and why this becomes more of a discussion. Are you going to be able to trade Emmanuel Wilson for anything? Probably not. Or Jarvion Howard? Probably not. But if one of those guys looks good, you keep them and then you do get something in return for AJ Dillon. That's another thing. It could be cheaper. You know, it could be younger. It could be more cost effective. And if you keep Wilson instead of Dillon, you might actually gain a draft pick back in return by trading Dillon away, which you probably wouldn't get for Wilson. So that's the scenario that has to play out. And I'll say it one more time. I expect AJ Dillon on this roster, but these are the sort of decisions that seem to always catch people off guard of like, oh my goodness, they're trading AJ Dillon for a seventh round pick. What is going on here? But when you've got a situation where exactly what we talked about could play out. And if it plays out that way, then yes, you call around and you see if you can get something. And the likelihood that you would get anything significant in return is nil, because you didn't get anything on the open market in free agency. So you're hoping you get a sixth or seventh round pick in return. And I think you would, quite frankly. So that's another way that this could go about and this could happen. But again, it is paramount that probably Emmanuel Wilson's the guy we're talking about here, who spent the entire last season on the 53-man roster. If they still think highly of him, then that's how this would go down. And you try to get whatever you can for Dylan in return, specifically probably a late round pick. All right, two wide receivers on this list, Grant Dubose and Samore Toure. Now, both of these players are probably going to have eye-opening training camps and eye-opening preseasons to some extent. I would find it pretty hard to believe that you would call around right now and any team's willing to give up a seventh-round pick for Samore Toure or Grant Dubose. Maybe you could get a conditional pick, meaning we will trade a future seventh-round pick for Samore Toure, or we will trade a future seventh-round pick for Grant Dubose if they make the 53-man roster. If they don't, if we release them, you don't get anything in return. And for Green Bay, right now, that's just not worth it. Because right now, you'll take the extra depth, you'll take the opportunity to see if they progress in any significant way. So right now, that's not worth it. But if you do get to maybe a week or two before cut down time, and maybe Samore Toure, Grant Dubose had a really good preseason game, and you recognize, hey, we're not going to be able to keep all these guys, you call around, you see if you're able to get anything in return. I don't believe any of their other wide receivers are really going to be on the market. Romeo Dobbs, Christian Watson, certainly not Dontavian Wicks, Jaden Reed, Bo Melton, even Malik Heath. I think those guys are just going to make the team, but you're not going to be able to keep all of them. You're probably not going to keep seven or eight wide receivers. So if you do get to that point, you do call around. And again, I understand the idea here of like, who's going to trade for Samore Toure or who's going to trade for Grant Dubose? But if they have a couple big preseason games, get on maybe some people's radar, absolutely. And I will fire back at you and I'll say, who's going to trade for Cole Van Lannen or Kadar Holloman or Reggie Gilbert or Justin McCray or Trevor Davis or Brett Hundley? These are not exactly players that were tearing it up in Green Bay when Brian Gutekunst was able to get something in return. So if Toure or Dubose have a couple big weeks in preseason, make a name for themselves, and you know you're not going to be able to keep them on the roster anyway, some team throws a seventh round pick or even a conditional seventh round pick at you, by all means, take it. Maybe it can turn into something in the future. Defensive lineman, this is a tougher one. That would be Colby Wooden. This is a tough sort of trail to navigate. I don't think it's impossible, though. Really, what would need to happen is everyone stays healthy along the defensive line and at edge rusher. And you have two players in particular, in all likelihood, that step up. And those two players would have to be Jonathan Ford and Brenton Cox. And we've already seen it from Brenton Cox. All right. You're probably going to keep 9 to 10 total defensive linemen, meaning edge rushers and defensive tackles. And the beautiful thing about Colby Wooden is that he's got now versatility. He can play some defensive end and he can play defensive tackle. But if you get to the end of training camp and you feel like you've got Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith, LVN, and Kingsley Enagbare and Brenton Cox as defensive ends, that you're going to keep all five of them, all right, well, then you feel good there and you move to defensive tackle. If you feel like Kenny Clark and Carl Brooks and, TJ Slayton and Devontae Wyatt, sorry about that. If you feel all four of those guys are going to make the team, clearly, and maybe Jonathan Ford has a big preseason, that's not a huge leap to make. If you remember, a year ago, he made the initial 53. Now, they eventually released him and did some roster maneuvering, and he went back on the practice squad. But he did make the initial 53 last year, which means he was at least close and in the conversation to being one of the final one or two guys that were going to make the team. So if Jonathan Ford and Brenton Cox go out and play really, really well, and it just kind of leaves Colby Wooden in no man's land, and in particular, this is kind of where we get to that AJ Dillon conversation again. If you cut Jonathan Ford, you might lose him, and you certainly don't get anything in return. You're not going to get anything in trade for him. You're probably not going to get anything in trade for Brenton Cox, but a fourth round pick from a season ago and Colby Wooden, Could you get maybe a sixth round pick for him in return? I think so. Maybe even a fifth. So that would have to be the scenario that would play out. Now, if he was playing good enough and well enough where you could get something in return, I think you just find a way to make the roster math to keep all the guys. You can never have enough defensive linemen. You can never have enough versatile defensive linemen like Colby Wooden is. That's a tough path to navigate. But again, if you do have 10 guys you feel really good about, and Colby Wooden is right in there with Jonathan Ford and with Brenton Cox, well, then you trade the guy that you can get something in return for. You keep the other 10, and you feel really good still about the depth that you have at that position. Corner, this will be the biggest name that we talk about. This will have to be Eric Stokes. What if Keyshawn Nixon wins the slot, Jair Alexander is healthy, Carrington Valentine's healthy, Stokes has some issues in preseason, doesn't look quite himself, Corey Ballantyne looks good, and maybe you get a Kalen King that looks good, and you've got, you know, and then you want to maybe keep Robert Rochelle as like a six corner slash special teams guy. You've got six corners there on the roster. And again, Stokes maybe just didn't perform the way that you were hoping he was going to. Well, he's one that you can save a couple million dollars on by trading him away. And these are one of those deals like a Josh Jackson for Isaac Yiadom, where maybe you call around and say, hey, can we get a like for like player? Maybe a first or second round pick for some other team that is also struggling that maybe you liked coming out of the draft. And maybe Eric Stokes needs a change of scenery and to go to some other team in some other system. And maybe whatever first or second round pick that wasn't working out for that team needs a new change of scenery and a new system in Green Bay. And you make a like for like swap. Maybe it's that corner. Maybe it's a different position altogether. But I could easily see something like that happening if Stokes doesn't live up to expectations in preseason and training camp. Do I expect it? No. Do I think he's probably more likely to be the starter opposite Jair? Yes, I do. But I do think that there's enough savings there where if it doesn't go right and Carrington Valentine just wins that starting corner spot, that at least maybe you think about it and have that conversation. You've got two safeties that are on the list. You've got Anthony Johnson Jr. and Zane Anderson. And this is just a depth thing, right? You've got Xavier McKinney. You've got Javon Bullard. You've got Kitano Ladapo. And you've got Evan Williams. Those four are locks. And then you still have one of these two, probably if you want as your fifth, Anthony Johnson Jr. or Zane Anderson. And you still have Benny Sapp, who was on the 53-man roster last year as well as a special teams guy. So you could easily get to the point where you're willing to move on from a couple of these players. And you're going to have to, right? You're not going to keep seven safeties. And if it gets to the point where you recognize that, you know, four of the guys are uncuttable because you just drafted three of them and Xavier McKinney's not going anywhere, you're going to have to move on from Zane Anderson or Anthony Johnson Jr. or Benny Sapp and probably maybe even two of them. And again, who might have trade value here? Anthony Johnson Jr., a seventh round pick from a season ago, he could. I think you might be able to get a seventh round pick for him. And then Zane Anderson, you know, again, if he has a decent preseason, this is somebody who had a season last year. He was a core special teamer. Green Bay claimed him off waivers. He was on the 53 all last year. I know he had that three interception day at you know, OTAs. I don't think anyone's probably trading for him based off of that. But overall, I think he could be a player that, again, maybe some team needs some special teams help, needs some safety depth, and gives up a conditional seventh for a Zane Anderson. I don't think that's unheard of. So those would be two players. I think more likely Anthony Johnson Jr. Some team liked him in the draft, just wasn't able to pick him up last year. Maybe liked what they saw on tape in Green Bay. Maybe some good preseason tape out there. And some team's willing to give up something for him. So maybe you take it. Maybe go with a Benny Sapp or a Zane Anderson as your backup. Or if you want to keep Anthony Johnson Jr., then you shop Zane Anderson around. And the last two are specialists, Greg Joseph and Matt Orzech. Now, is this, again, super likely? No. But what can happen is it seems to get desperate at these positions. And if Peter Bowden makes it as the Packers long snapper and some other team is just having massive issues with long snapping, where do teams ultimately go? They usually go to a long snapper that's been in the league and they maybe have a little bit more trust in. So even if Orzech struggles a little bit, the fact that he's long snapped in the league for a while now, you know, for the Rams and the Packers, you might end up with a team willing to give up a future late seventh round pick. And that might, you might have to wait a couple years. It might be like literally the least possible you can get a seventh round pick 2 years down the road. But if some team needs a long snapper and Orzech becomes available, yeah, I could see that happening. Same thing at kicker. Greg Joseph is an experienced kicker in the league. And what if Greg Joseph and Anders Carlson both go out and have massive preseasons? They make every single kick, they look great, and both of them are capable of making 53s. I guarantee you some team is going to panic about their kicker and they're going to try to go in a different direction. And if Joseph looks great in preseason, maybe you can pick up a future seventh for him. Think that's within the realm of possibility as well. And you're probably more likely to keep Anders Carlson in that situation. So those are the guys. I do think that these are all scenarios that could come into play. Do I expect all of them? No. Do I expect maybe one or two? I expect maybe not. But it wouldn't shock me if Brian Gutekunst shopped some of these guys and maybe did pick up another one of those sixth or seventh round picks, just like he did in the past for some of his fringe roster guys that he was probably going to release anyway. Is it the sexiest group of names in the world? No. But again, neither were Cole Van Landen or Kadar Holloman, Trevor Davis, Justin McCray, Reggie Gilbert, or Brett Hundley. Sometimes teams get desperate for some depth at positions, and a guy that had a good preseason or has played some in the past gets moved to the top of their list, and you're lucky enough to pick up a future asset for it. And I guarantee you, Brian Gutekunst will be making those phone calls trying to get that future asset in return. All right, one last thing we have to talk about really quick, and that's what could Green Bay want in return? And we talked about maybe some late round draft picks could be what Green Bay just ultimately looks for, but there could be some other things. They could be looking for a kicker. What if Joseph and Carlson and the whole trio of kickers just struggle and they don't find their guy? And somewhere else, there's a group of kickers that are performing well. They could look to try to get maybe one of those kickers in return. And maybe you do trade a player like an Anthony Johnson Jr. or Colby Wooden or, you know, who knows, for a kicker in return. You could also look to have to fill in for injured players. I guarantee you there's going to be probably a couple players that get hurt in training camp and aren't ready to go for week one. And there are a couple positions that Green Bay is a little bit thin at. And if they are, they could be looking for players in return that would fill some of those positions that need to be filled due to injury. And last but not least, it could just be a value thing. It could be something where they valued a player coming out of the draft and they feel like some team is selling low on them and they want to take a swing and they think that they can be the team that develops that player. Like that will happen from time to time around the league as well. So if they see a seventh round pick or a sixth round pick for a guy they're going to cut anyway, or maybe they need a kicker, or a player to fill in for an injury, or just a value add to the team. Again, it's those incremental increases. It's not always going to be trading for Jonathan Taylor. It might just be a random trade that finds a way down the road to help you, and maybe just a future draft pick that turns into a all-pro wide receiver. You just never know. So these type of deals, again, maybe not the sexiest topic in the world, but it is something that I guarantee you Brian Gutekunst will be active in doing because he has been in the past. And it has paid dividends, even if it's on the margins. But that's what the best GMs do. They look for every small possible way to make their team better, even if it is on the margins. Because again, you don't know when maybe you might get a Rashid Walker or a Donald Driver or a Mark Tauscher or a Carrington Valentine or some hidden gem in the seventh round that you received in the first place by jettisoning in a guy that you were going to cut and wasn't going to make the team anyway. And now you've got that additional asset. That is going to do it for me today. Thank you as always for joining me. I'll be right back here tomorrow with an all new episode. Shout out to our Hall of Fame and All Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wayne, John Wild, Shabrad Dad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Dan Miller, Alex Hwang, Arnaldo Espinoza, Dan Gesford, and Peter Rataka. Tomorrow, you will see me again. You guys are the absolute best. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.